He always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this? And we're live. Welcome, everybody, here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin, Senior Lakers Insider for Clutch Points, and today on the show, we're going to talk a little bit about the lottery, reports out of Dallas that they are going to take Cooper Flagg and the impact that that might have on the trade market, and then I'm going to answer your questions. So whatever it is that you guys want to talk about as well, reports out of Boston also are that our fears were confirmed for Jason Tatum, and he did suffer that ruptured Achilles tendon. They already performed the surgery, and there obviously is no timetable for a return on him. All the best to Tatum. And look, as somebody who watched my favorite player growing up suffer that injury and understand how shitty that was to watch, to Celtics fans, I know I give them a hard time, and we've been rooting specifically against their team this postseason. That sucks, man. Brutal. Absolutely worst case scenario there for them. And you know, prayers that he makes a full recovery. But anyway, we're going to talk about a bunch of stuff. I'm going to be all over the place, I would imagine, in the show, as these mailbags tend to be. So ask away. If you guys have any questions or topics that you guys want covered, hit me with them. The order, the priority here is iTunes mailbag, some Twitter, super comments, and then live audience comments. And that'll take us through the show before I rush off and watch Andor. All right, let's dive on in. Quick reminder, please do hit us with questions quick reminder, please hit that subscribe button and that like button and that share button and all of the nice buttons. And then if you guys are listening to this in the morning via podcast, please hit that subscribe button wherever it is that you guys are watching and tell your friends about the show. Tell your friends that you love the show. Tell your enemies that you hate it. And without any further ado, let's dive on in. The first question I see here, I might have answered it already, but it was a week ago. I'm not positive if I got to it. I'll answer it quickly just in case. Viva Exceptionalism writes, Anthony, I've been listening to your podcast since before Locked On Lakers and Team Tank and won't stop now. Congrats on your success and know it will continue. Ooh, I think I did read this one. I appreciate the kind words. Saw Rob was on only 5 of 30 ballots for executive of the year. Notwithstanding his engineering the greatest holdup since the Great Train Robbery, it indicates to me that most of his peers dislike him. Do you agree? Do you think this inhibits his ability to improve the Lakers because most teams won't want to deal with him? What are your thoughts? Great work as always. Viva Exceptionalism. So, yeah, I think there's a connection to be made here. And look, the voting results for that award are a good indicator of that. I, unfortunately, because of the conversations I have with people around the league, am also under no assumptions that Rob is anything but not particularly popular in league circles. So I have that to work off too. And yeah, that is a thing that, you know, part of the reason that I wanted the Lakers to bring in a general manager would be to kind of bring in somebody who has some more productive relationships with other people around the league and, hopefully, you know, enhance those conversations a little bit, compared to where they've stood recently. But the Lakers don't want to operate like that. They don't want to open up that circle. And Rob, look, love it or hate it, he is, by way of that Luka trade, earned this extension. And now it's a matter of him earning his next one based off what he does, at least at the beginning of this Luka era and at the end of this LeBron era. So I do think you're reading the tea leaves there properly, and can basically confirm that Rob is not the most popular guy in league circles. Part of it because of him being a former agent and negotiating against some of these executives. Part of it because of how he talks to people and negotiates with people. And also part of it is that he's the head decision maker for the Lakers, and the Lakers as an organization are not very popular because they've ruined so many people's childhoods over the years. So a lot going on there, but no, I think that's a good reading of the situation. Next question here comes from QBreezy12, who writes, among Durant, Lively, Gafford, Claxton, Kessler, Wendell Carter, and Miles Turner, who was the best realistic option for fit and impact? Any other names that you have in mind? So I'm going to go ahead and eliminate Durant, and I'm going to eliminate Turner. Those two guys, just no chance. Turner and his team just made it to the Eastern Conference Finals. I would imagine they are going to bring back much of that team, almost regardless of how the rest of this postseason plays out. Jalen Durant obviously had a great run with the Pistons. They completely turned their organization around. The Lakers did have a conversation with Detroit last season about Durant, and I'm told that conversation didn't get very far. And I think it would not even get that far this time around if they called about him. So Durant, Turner gone. Lively, I don't see him being moved. He is perfect for Cooper Flagg and that timeline. So I would imagine Lively is there for the foreseeable future. Gafford, I'm going to talk about here in a bit, and how I think there is a possibility there. I use the analogy of beating a buddy of yours at golf and then seeing their mood improve by way of things that are completely beyond your control later at the bars on the lowdown. I hope you guys check that out on the RSS feed. But yeah, I think Gafford is a possibility. Claxton is the guy that is more frequently linked to the Lakers in the conversations I've had to this point than any other center. Walker Kessler, Utah's kind of licking their wounds because of how far they fell in the lottery. I still think they're going to build through youth and flexibility through the draft. And, unless they see this as another opportunity to acquire more opportunities to be at the top of the draft, maybe that's how that's a reason that they'll move Kessler. But the problem there is if you're moving Kessler to the Lakers, you're not going to land at the top of any draft for the foreseeable future because the Lakers now have Luka. So, and then on top of that, if you trade with the Lakers, you probably just made the draft pick that the Lakers are sending to them probably next year even worse. So that's another reason that I think Kessler is kind of complicated. Wendell Carter's a good one. I do think that the Magic are going to be looking to move bigs for shooting and creativity on the perimeter. They were a great defense this year, but their offense was utterly constipated. So I think they'll be looking for guys to kind of loosen up that offense for them. And, maybe if you, if they squint and see somebody like Gabe as some perimeter shooting, and an expiring contract and a draft pick and all that stuff, maybe that's enough to at least start a conversation with them for Wendell Carter. He's a good name to look at, but I would say of those names listed there, Claxton is pretty far and away seems like the most likely right now. But look, there's a, it's a long off season, and a lot is going to take place between now and, the, and with the draft and free agency. And you have a lot of teams kind of reshuffling their deck. Boston, I think, their intentions for seasons to come might look very different because of the Jason Tatum news. Cleveland, I think, is going to be taking a good hard look at the way that their roster is composed now that they have had another disappointing end to their postseason. So I think that these conversations, you always see teams doing all kinds of moves to give themselves an opportunity at trading for a Giannis if he hits the market, or trading for a Kevin Durant if he hits the market. So there's a lot up in the air heading into this offseason. And I think this list of centers, while obviously a good list of centers, that list is going to change a lot over the course of the offseason. The next one here is A Gear 40 writing, "Hey, Anthony, as always, appreciate all that you do." Thank you very much. I appreciate the question. "As a Lakers fan, it's impossible to not compare stars against Kobe. 2010, Game 7 against the Celtics, Kobe shot horribly, kept shooting, but also did everything else to make up for the poor shooting. My question is, in a situation like that, do you believe Luka will be able to, will be willing to do the same thing? P.S. I believe the trade was 100% the correct move. Just a nagging worry I have." I share that same worry to a certain extent, in that Luka's impact, and to be absolutely clear, he has incredible impact on winning, and has over the course of his career, not just in the NBA, but even when he was playing in Europe. But I would like to see him, as he matures a little bit and develops as a basketball mind, because I the one thing I don't question about Luka is his competitive fire. He wants to win. He desperately, desperately wants to win. Now, I think he wants to win on his terms, as we have talked about previously on the show. But at no point in my life have I ever looked at that guy and been like, "Yeah, I'm not sure he really cares all that much about winning." Like, that is the furthest thing from my mind when I think of Luka Doncic. And if that is your mentality, at some point in your life or in your career, or in their careers, players kind of look around and they say, "All right, am I doing absolutely everything I can to give my team the best chance that they can to win?" A really good example of this actually is LeBron, who obviously playing in Cleveland hindered him quite a bit, but he also got to Miami and looked around and, you know, realized, "Well, I'm playing with Dwayne Wade. Chris Bosh does play the five, and that helps us some with spacing. Mario Chalmers isn't the best shooter either. They did bring in Mike Miller, and he really helped with some of the spacing as well." But at some point, LeBron was like, "You know what? I really got to take this shooting thing a lot more seriously." And then you've seen over the years, he's gotten better and better and better and better and better at shooting. And as we just saw this last season with LeBron, he kind of looked around and said, "All right, Luka's going to handle the on-ball stuff. We do not have a center. I'm the only player on this team who plays with any real force consistently. All right, I'm going to have to be Draymond 2.0. And he figured out ways to do that. And I think that is something that you watched as a part of the maturation process from LeBron James over the course of his career. And you could, there are endless examples of this. Unfortunately, there are some guys who also go backwards. I think Giannis has kind of gone backwards in this regard, where he won a championship being really active in the pick and roll and setting screens and rolling hard to the basket. And he has added to his game, don't get me wrong, but he's added to his game, but he's also taken that off of the table. And the result is a net positive, but it shouldn't be the net positive that it should be. And you've seen Milwaukee get kind of stuck in the mud, and it'll be interesting to see whether that is in Milwaukee here moving forward, or that is elsewhere if Giannis plays with a primary ball handler if Giannis gets back to setting screens, and if he does, good Lord, look out. But if he doesn't, then whoever acquires him, I think there's going to be a little of that. Hey, could you like get back to doing that one thing? And I think here with Luka, very much like I want to see him over the next few years, and the sooner the better, find ways to impact the game when he doesn't have the ball. That's on defense, that's in rebounding, that's on offense by being more active as a screen setter or a floor spacer if the Lakers do have another creative player, as they do in LeBron and in Austin. If Luka changes his approach with that stuff, I think he becomes a lot more dangerous a player, and the Lakers become a lot more dangerous a team. Until he does, that is going to be something that us as Lakers fans, having watched Kobe do exactly what Q Breezy is talking about, that is always going to be something that we're like, yeah, but, and I would like to remove the yeah, but. That was A. Gear who wrote that one. Sorry. All right. So Bruin Writer 78 writes, why do you ignore the Lakers' success against Denver, OKC, the Clippers, and Houston since the Doncic trade? Those teams don't have enough big athletic defenders to cover LeBron, Luka, and Reeves. And against the Warriors, Austin shredded their defense. So the outcome of that series would come down to how Golden State's role players would shoot. And I don't think Green and Pajemski are going to make 10 of 14 three-pointers again. Minnesota had a doomsday defense, plus size and rebounding, plus an athletic superstar in Ant who could penetrate any defense. Without a center, the Lakers made Julius Randle look like a younger version of LeBron. The Lakers weren't a championship-level squad because they only had one pitch, and they faced the one batter who loved to hit fastballs. It's that simple. If the Lakers were on the OKC side of the bracket, you would be gushing over their chances to beat Minnesota in the Western Conference Finals. And if the Wolves made it, we would have had the same disappointing results. No, I do think that matchups really matter here. And I do think, especially now that we're at the end of this Celtics window, teams are going to be a lot more imperfect moving forward. And matchups are only going to become more and more and more important over the course of forever, or at least over the course of the extent of this, the run of this CBA. That said, a lot of the issues that Minnesota presented to the Lakers, it's not like over the course of the postseason, they go away. And yeah, the Lakers had success against Denver, OKC, and the Clippers and Houston. But I think over the course of that series, like the Lakers were able to have that success against those teams in one. And the OKC example here is a little complicated, obviously, because we saw them play that team two times in a row. But when you play Denver one time in a row, there is no wear down factor over multiple games that size can have on you. Look at this series between Golden State and the Timberwolves right now. Obviously the giant caveat is that Golden State is playing without Steph Curry and their offense has completely fallen off of a cliff. But look at those guys who are currently playing. I have never thought, when I thought about the Golden State Warriors as a team that would ever lose kind of the will to live, but watch that team. They're getting bludgeoned repeatedly with a mallet, and over the course of these, you know, individual games, and then especially over the course of the series, that winds up hurting. And the thing that I would like for the Lakers to take really seriously is the impact of prolonged physicality, and the impact that has on teams. And I think when we just look hyper closely at their success in one game sample sizes against some of these teams that are bigger and longer and faster, we ignore the success that the 2019-2020 team had by being bigger, longer, and faster. That's not to say that you ignore skill altogether, not saying that at all, but I do think the Lakers have gone completely out of whack when it comes to the balance of skill type players and physical tool type players, it's way too much in the favor of these skill type players. And there aren't nearly enough just dogs on this team. And that's what the Lakers need to get back to. And I think that Minnesota series, while it was a terrible matchup, in the way that I'm approaching what comes out of that series, I consider that kind of a blessing that the Lakers faced that matchup when they did and were kind of notified and put on blast. Okay, yeah, we do have to get bigger. We do have to get more athletic and stronger. And those physical tools need to be brought back into the fold to a much greater extent than they are right now. All right, I'm going to take a quick break from the mailbag and dive into a couple thoughts that I've had about the lottery. One, to all of the people who are just sitting there on their high horse, who are saying, no way the lottery could possibly be rigged. And anybody who was even hinting at that, you're the reason that you have election deniers. And it's like, come on, guys. It's not that serious. Like, it really isn't. It's a sport. It's an entertainment industry. The NBA is. Shit, what we do is an entertainment industry. We're allowed to tell jokes from time to time. We're allowed to dive into bits from time to time to entertain our audiences. But as it pertains to this, like, lottery rigging thing and the people who are just so ardently calling anybody who casts any aspersions whatsoever about the lottery, the way that they're reacting to all of this, and the number of shows that are like, is this rigged? Is it actually rigged? I think the number, like the ratio of people who are actually claiming that this thing is legitimately rigged, and I had a good time yesterday with Harrison laughing about the possibility that it is rigged. I don't actually truly believe that it is rigged. It's a fun thing to laugh about, though. And the number of people who are defending the legitimacy of the NBA's lottery far outnumber the people who are legitimately claiming on actual platforms that the thing is rigged. So calm down. Secondly, what I will say about the lottery is that I think it needs to be greatly simplified. You need to flatten out the odds completely. And I'll have some thoughts on flattened odds, because I've seen a lot of people whining about the flattened odds today. But I think they need to flatten those odds completely and use that machine that they use to do the lottery now. Put that in the middle of the dais, or on stage there on ESPN. Put 14 ping pong balls in that lottery. Or I saw people saying expand it to include all the teams that don't make the conference finals. I'd be fine with that. That'd be kind of fun. That way you don't decentivize people making the playoffs. Bring. You know, so if you have four teams that make the conference finals, put 26 ping pong balls, all clearly labeled with teams' logos and team colors and stuff like that. No City Edition ping pong balls.